Madhava Kunja Vihari.
Shainitya Lila Purvista Astatara Satasi Simonis Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Premsukho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundar Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Gira Govardhan Ki Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaura Pirinandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 14, text number 41. Sri Sukho Vacha Itya Bhishtuya Bhumanam Tri Parikramya Padayo Natvabhishtam Jagadatta Svadama Pratyapadyata Sri Sukho Vacha Itya Bhishtuya Bhumanam Tri Parikrama Padayo Natvabhishtam Jagadatta Svadama Pratyapadyata Sri Sukahu Vacha Itya Bhishtuya Bhumanam Tri Parikramya Padayo Natvabhishtam Jagadatta Svadama Pratyapadyata. Please chant. Matajis. Sri Sukho Vacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, iti, thus, Abhishtuya.
Offering praise.
Bhumanam. To the unlimited Supreme Lord. Tri. Three times. Parikramya. Circumambulating. Padayo. At his feet. Natva. Bowing down. Abhishtam. Desired. Jagat. Of the universe. Data. The creator. Swadhamma. To his personal abode. Pratyapadayata. Returned. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus offered his prayers, Brahma circumambulated his worshipable Lord, the unlimited personality of Godhead, three times and then bowed down at his lotus feet. The appointed creator of the universe then returned to his own residence. Can you please repeat? Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus offered his prayers, Brahma circumambulated his worshipable Lord, the unlimited personality of Godhead, three times, and then bowed down at his lotus feet. The appointed creator of the universe then returned to his own residence. Purport. Although Lord Brahma had prayed to take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan, or even in the area surrounding Vrindavan, Lord Krishna, by his silent response to Brahma's prayers, indicated that Brahma should return to his own abode. First, Brahma had to complete his personal devotional service of universal creation. Then he could come to Vrindavan and get the mercy of the inhabitants there. In other words, a devotee should always be attentive to executing his personal devotional service properly. This is more important than trying to live in the Lord's abode. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yenatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayati Agirim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guram Dinatarino Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bahibacha Patitanam Pavinevyo Vaishnavebyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare So there are several very important points made in this verse and short purport. And even some opposing conclusions. The theme of humility that's been present throughout this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam that I spoke about the other day reaches its culmination, its concluding point in this verse here. Actually, if we reflect back on just the final words of yesterday's purport, actually the final paragraph of yesterday's purport, Brahma's humility manifest in how, in the translator's words, he prays for the removal of his own subtle atheism. And we generally would not think of Lord Brahma as an atheist, particularly as he is our Sampradaya Acharya, the founder of our Sampradaya. But he's looking at it himself in that way because of his doubt in the supremacy of Krishna. He's thinking like that. So this humility is quite appropriate because, after all, humility is, as we've discussed several times, a very essential point in the development of our devotional service. So, particularly, I caught sight of a couple of the Sanskrit words here. Parikramya padayo. circumambulating the lotus feet. Of course, I'm probably not any different than anyone else in this regards, but prior to being a devotee, I never had any concept of this idea of circumambulating. You know, I mean, what's that about, you know? But as a new devotee, I remember very clearly, I think I saw Guru Bhakmi here earlier. He was a St. Louis boy too. And, you know, we were very regularly trained in this circumambulation. Actually, circumambulating the temple. The St. Louis temple was on a row of brownstone houses, so we couldn't actually go between the buildings, so it was the entire block. And 25 devotees every morning after Mangal Arati, after Tulsi Puja, get your coats on if it was the winter, just grab whatever if it was the summer, and line up out front in front of the temple, do your, all the way around the block chanting japa, you know, and then three times like that, you know, that's how we were trained, you know, that's what we knew to do. And Tulsi, same thing in the morning when we worship Srimati Tulsi. We offer obeisances and we circumambulate Tulsi three times. So, you know, those that are, those that have the supreme good fortune to have taken their birth and or been raised in the holy dhams, this is a way of life. You know, if you go to Vrindavan, everybody's always circumambulating everything. I mean, at all times. If you go to Jaipur, it's wonderful the way the Jaipur Temple of Govindaji is arranged. There's this huge, wide circumambulation path all the way around the deities. You know, sometimes you just have this kind of little, like at the Radha Vinod Temple in Jaipur, the circumambulation path's a little bitty hallway around the back, you know, maybe two people at a time, you know. In Jaipur, it's like the size of an avenue. You can probably take a Roth card or something back there, you know. So it's designed like that because it's understood. This is what's going to happen. And, of course, that famous picture of Prabhupada, he would lead the devotees in the morning in Sridham Mayapur after greeting Radha Madhava three times around the deities and stop and ring the bell at each time. And that glorious picture of Prabhupada with that big smile ringing the bell and the devotees just in ecstasy. Speaking of devotees in ecstasy during kirtan, I don't know what these guys had for breakfast, but I want some. Incredible dancing this morning. So this circumambulating like this is a very essential part of that. It's so important and key to our development that it's given as one of the 64 principles of devotional service by Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion. And also, it's given as one of the 64 items of deity worship, of puja offered in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. I'd just like to read these particular selections on this. Item number 53, circumambulation of the deity. Srila Prabhupada writes, "A person who is circumambulating the deity of Vishnu can counteract the circumambulation of repeated birth and death in this material world." It's from the Nectar Devotion. So, quite amazing. We are all traversing this material universe 16 gazillion different times, 8,400,000 actually. And we can counteract that whole process of samsara simply by circumambulating the deity of the Lord. "Walking clockwise around someone and thus keeping one's right side toward him," very important the direction one does, the other direction indicates something else, "is a way of showing respect. By circumambulating the deity in this way, we worship the deity with our whole body." We were reading in the previous canto, Ambarishmara Sabai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo, how he would engage his entire body in the worship of the Lord. Well, this is one way to engage the entire body. "One should not circumambulate others in front of the deity, nor should one circumambulate the deity only once. As a part of the puja, one should circumambulate the deity at least three times." So, to assist in this process of circumambulating three times, there are three very specific mantras given for this purpose. Yani kani chapapani, janmatara kritani cha, tani tani vinasyantu, Pradakshina Pade Pade. "Whatever sins I have committed and accumulated in this and previous births, may all the reactions to them be destroyed with every step of circumambulation that I take. Pradakshina Tvayam Deva, Prayatena Maya Kritam, Tena Papani Sarvani, Vinasaya Namostute. O Lord, please destroy all my sins as I circumambulate you three times. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Damodar Padmanabha Sankha Chakra Gadadaro Pradakshinam Karishyami Kalpa Sadanam He Prabhu. O Damodar, O Padmanabha, O holder of the conch, disc, and club, allow me to circumambulate you in this way. So this is the method that we're given for this circumambulation. And to the point that there's actually prayers for performing that. So this means that someone, some great acharya, has seen fit that not only is this an important thing to do, but here are prayers you can recite while doing it to fix the consciousness. You know, so this is a principle that's given to us. It's very easy to follow, and as it mentions, it takes the whole body, and we just engage in the Lord. But one thing that I was thinking about is that this type of service, this type of action, requires two things. It requires humility, and it requires regulation, so that one takes up something as a part of their regular service, as a part of their practicing sadhana. Humility, of course, because to execute the principle of devotional service means to accept something greater than myself. This is the very premise of our devotional life, both in the sense of rendering service to the personality of Godhead, and more importantly, in the sense of how we render that service through the medium of the spiritual master. Humility in approaching the spiritual master as he is imparting knowledge unto us, Om Jnana Tamarandasya, and humility in the sense of realizing we cannot approach the Lord directly, but we approach the Lord through the spiritual master. Just like when one goes on the altar, the first action one performs is to offer flowers at the lotus feet of the Guru, as Sri Guru Parabananda Premananda Pralapita, and beg for the spiritual master's permission. Please engage me in the service of the Lord. You engage me, not that I've come on and I'm serving the deity. My dear spiritual master, you engage me in service of the Lord. So there's humility like that. So I got to thinking about it, and naturally, whenever we think of regulation, you know, we come to mind Raghunath Das Goswami, historically speaking. It's described that the vows, the austerities, the regulative actions of Raghunath Das Goswami were like lines in a stone. It's really very, very, you have a line in a stone, it doesn't waver, it's very solid. And to speak a little bit more in my own visual reference, I thought of my friend Nagaraj, that, you know, very focused. You see, every day he's got his regulation, he's got his attendance at the program, he's got his, you can practically set your clock by his activities. So this type of regulation is what allows us the advancement. They're both essential factors, key factors, if you will, in the practice of circumambulating the deity and in the practice of our advancement in devotional service. So, what is being circumambulated? That is another essential point here. It's specifically mentioned in here, padayo, Krishna's lotus feet. This is what we circumambulate, are the places where Krishna's lotus feet are or have been, are those who have the lotus feet of the Lord within their heart, the Guru, the Vaishnava. So these are the focuses of such circumambulation. Not that we just randomly pick something, but that there is a specific direction in how we focus this circumambulation. For instance, circumambulating the Dham. I mentioned that just a little bit earlier, that it's a very wonderful activity. I was looking at the word here at the end of the last line here, Svadhamma. his abode. This is in this particular context, it's referring to the abode of Lord Brahma. But I thought if we took that Sanskrit word and used it in connection with the second line of the Sanskrit, parikrama padayo, that it then becomes circumambulating the place of the Lord's lotus feet. And this, of course, refers to the Dham. Now, in Vrindavan or in Govardhan, constantly we see the circumambulation is going on. I'm sure all of you here have had the opportunity to be in Vrindavan at some time. And you can go on the Parikrama Marg any time of the day or night, and it's busy. There's families, there's sadhus, there's holy persons, just, you know, regular businessmen circumambulating Govardhan, circumambulating Vrindavan. And on certain days, whew, it's like totally packed. The last Ekadasi of the Kartik season, if you have plans, it's a very, very glorious day for circumambulating the Dham. And if you have plans to circumambulate Vrindavan on that day, you better be out there early. And by early, I don't mean 4 o'clock. I mean, by 3, 4 o'clock, there are literally hundreds of thousands of people. It is like a huge festive mood. They are literally shoulder to shoulder, you know, sadhus, saints, mayavadis, Vaishnavas, holy men, shopkeepers, entire families, generations, and they're all barefoot. I have the greatest respect for them. I just can't do it. I used to be able to do it when the Vrindavan Parikram Marg was actually sandy. I remember those days. Some of you are new enough that you never saw the sand there. But there actually used to be sand all the way around Vrindavan. And it was so comfortable, especially down on the east side near the Jamuna. As you come around there at the and come up near the Jagannath Mandir, oh, it used to be so refreshing there. So nice. But instead, we find now that they have paved it with asphalt. And it's not like the asphalt we have here. It's asphalt with stones in it. And they don't make any effort to make sure the sharp edges of the stones are down. They just throw the stones in there. So it's very, very uncomfortable. And it's just a testament to the amazing devotion of these persons that they do this barefooted. And Govardhan is very much like this as well. You know, certain days of the year, the parikram around Govardhan Hill is just unbelievably packed. And there you have the added performance, if you will, of Dandabhat Parikram. It's more common at Govardhan. It's done in Vrindavan also, but it's more common at Govardhan. And you see so many people doing this parikram like that, you know, Dandabhat Parikram. And actually, it's not very well known, but during the month of Kartik, one of our residents here goes to Vrindavan and every single day hops on a bus in Vrindavan, takes it over to Govardhan early in the morning, and walks around Govardhan Hill every day, and that would be Bhadra Prabhu. That's his vrata for Kartik. Every day, if you go to Vrindavan during Kartik, you'll see him doing parikram of Govardhan Hill. Quietly, just by himself, chanting his japa, just, you know, doesn't get sidetracked. He's not there to take darshans and go and see this place and that place, just performing his sadhana of going around Govardhan Hill like this every single day. So, very, very nice service. So, I was looking at the purport and the verse yesterday and putting it with today, and there's the notation given of Krishna's silent response to Brahma's prayers. Now, we're on text 41, and the conclusion of these prayers was yesterday, text 40. So let's take off the first 3-4 verses of the chapter for, you know, introduction. So we basically have 35 verses of prayers that have been offered by Lord Brahma in glorification of Sri Krishna. Now, you know, for an ordinary person, if someone stands in front of you with folded palms and offers 35 verses of prayers, Most of us are going to pay a little bit of attention. Aside from the fact that the false ego is going to be quite satisfied, this is going to be something we're going to listen for and make note of and show some reaction to. Kind of reminded me of when Lord Chaitanya was speaking with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was explaining all of Vedanta, and he sat there for those days and just listened and listened and listened. Sarvabhauma was like, do you get what I'm saying? You haven't said a thing. Not a word out of you. Oh, I understand what's being said. I don't understand how you're explaining it, but I understand the subject matter. So you would think here that there'd be some reaction from Krishna, but Krishna is silent to the prayers. Doesn't make any particular reaction at all. And it's interesting if we if we look at Brahma's reflective and introspective mood about this particular leela, because this is just one leela in Lord Brahma's life, and in particular in his relationship with Krishna. And so, any of us that have an experience that is very impactful on us, we carry that realization with us if we have any type of consciousness about us. So Lord Brahma actually carries that with him, and it's quite interesting here in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Sanatan Goswami gives a nice explanation here. For those of you that may or may not be familiar, just a quick synopsis. Narada Muni is trying to find the person who is the greatest beneficiary of the mercy of Lord Krishna. So he's working his way through creation and through different individuals, and not me, go to this, so on like that. So he's ended up at Brahma's doorstep. And the entire reaction of Lord Brahma is indicative of the sense of humility that is present in this chapter. I'll just read this. Sri Parikit said, thus loudly praising Brahma, bowing before him with great devotion again and again, the sage Narada expansively, very great detail, expansively sang Brahma's glories as he had heard them from Indra and had seen them with his own eyes. Merely by hearing what Narada was saying, Brahma grew disturbed. He anxiously covered his eight ears. I don't know how you... He's only got four arms, so how's he covering his eight? Anyway, and repeated over and over again, I am just a servant. I am just a servant. After some effort, the four-headed Brahma checked the anger that stirred within him on hearing what no one should hear and rebuked Narada. Now, this is interesting. Sanatana Goswami describes it as what no one should hear. And what is that? Praise of glorification. Because what does that do? It simply builds the false ego. So Sanatana Goswami says, this is something you shouldn't hear, your own praises. So Brahma says, I am not the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. On what authority and by what logic do you say this? Haven't I constantly taught you this since you were a little boy? Now remember the dynamics of the relationship here. Brahma is the father of Narada Muni. So he says, since you were a little boy, I mean, we all teach our children, right? Since you were a little boy, haven't I taught you who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is? he describes a little bit here. And then this is very nice. Brahma then says, and he says, by the power of Krishna's Maya, I am always deluded by various conceits. I think myself the controller, the grandfather, the spiritual master of the universe. Proud of my birth from Krishna's lotus navel, I think myself a great ascetic, his great worshiper. I am overwhelmed by the countless duties of universal management. Worrying about the imminent destruction of my planet, I live in terror of our devouring end of time. All I want for myself is liberation. So here's the creator of the universe, and he says, oh, I'm just constantly afraid of the fact that I'm going to die. Ultimately, it's coming to an end. Okay, Brahma's time of coming to an end is significantly more than ours from our perception, but from his, not so much, no. For this purpose of liberation, I engage others in worshiping the Lord and also worship him myself. So at least some good intelligence is there. Since he is the Lord of the universe, is there any place he does not reside? In this verse here, Brahma gives a little bit of his personal insight to the Lord's actions. He accepts sacrificial offerings from me only to promote Vedic teachings and show special favor to the sacrifices themselves. which are dear to him because he is their original creator. So he's not accepting my offerings because, oh, I've given such nice offerings. Oh, please let me accept. No, he's only accepting them just to justify the activity of making offerings, not because of anything I've done. So that humility is still present in Brahma. And this is great here. He's addressing Narada. He says, just consider this, my dear professor of logic. What's that word there? Vichara Acharya. My dear professor of logic, I like that. He loves only devotion. He shows his mercy only to his devotees, never to non-devotees. Forget about my having any devotion for him. I would be happy if it were only true that I never offended him. I cannot expect him to tolerate my offenses as he does others. With the benedictions he attained for me, the wicked Hiranyakasipu became the tormentor of all the worlds and dedicated himself to violence against Vaishnavas. After the Lord in his form of Nrisimhadev destroyed Hiranyakasipu, I and my entourage stood fearful at a distance, trying to praise the Lord with skillful prayers, but he would not even honor us with a sidelong glance. When Prahlad was inaugurated as a king, the Lord at once became pacified. Then I approached him, and he angrily ordered me, "You should not give such benedictions to the demons, O lotus-born." Nevertheless, I kept on giving benedictions to wicked persons like Ravana, whose tongue can even mention the sins that Ravana has performed. Then he goes on and describes some more of the different things that he's done, the different difficulties and how the different living entities, and this is where he brings it about. He says, and recently, so in his mind, this is a recent event. This isn't something that, oh, you know, we're looking at historically. You know, it's like, you know, last week. You heard what I did last week? And recently, by my magic, I stole the calves and the young friends of the Lord as he was watching them in Vrindavan. I took them all away while the boys were having lunch. I then saw the most amazing wonders and became frightened. Offering prayers and bowing down to the Lord, I thought, I am so arrogant. But now, in his pastime as a cowherd boy, he has tricked me. So here his humility as the acharya of our sampradaya, his humility as the son of Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is manifest in these concluding words here. I became so arrogant that he tricked me in his pastimes as a cowherd boy. This is a verse I like very much in this regard. Simply by the spontaneous glance of favor upon me from his lotus face, I became joyful. I realized how fortunate I was to have visited the land of Braja, which is so dear to the Lord. Fearing I would commit more offenses if I stayed there too long, I went away. What else can I tell you about my ill fortune? So, in this way, Brahma takes this incident, which we're reading about in Srimad Bhagavatam, and makes it a part of his life, a part of his realization process, a part of his advancement in service to the Lord. So we ourselves, we have to be very, very careful. There's offenses of two different kinds that are committed in this pastime. One is the offense to the personality of Godhead himself. Secondly, as mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Lord Brahma is thinking, I can't stay too long in Braj, or I'll commit an offense here. So I thought, since we all appreciate the Dhamma, it might be nice to take a moment and read, what are these offenses to the holy Dhamma? These are offered to us by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Number one, to disrespect one's spiritual master who reveals the Dhamma to his disciple. Number two, to think that the holy Dhamma is temporary. This is one that's particularly difficult for some of us that have had the opportunity of early exposure, say, for instance, to Vrindavan, when it was all still sandy paths and there was no construction and there was hardly any cars. And then we go back to Vrindavan now and it's this metropolis. It's cars everywhere and honking horns and businesses and everything's grown up and nothing's like it was. So we tend to think the old Vrindavan. But we shouldn't think that the Dham is temporary and it's changed. The Dham is eternal. Number three, to commit violence toward any of the residents of the Dham or to any of the pilgrims who come here, or to think that they are ordinary people. It is not ordinary to take your birth in the Dham. It is not ordinary to be able to live in the Dham. Number four, to perform mundane activities while living in the holy Dham. Number five, to utilize the Dham for personal economic development in order to earn a livelihood. Number six, to think that the holy Dham belongs to some mundane country or province. To think that the Lord's Dham is equal to a holy place connected with some demigod, or to attempt to measure the area of the holy Dham. Number seven, to commit sinful activities while residing in the holy Dham. Number eight, to consider Vrindavan Dham different from Navadvip Dham. Number nine, to blaspheme the Shastras that glorify the holy Dham. And number 10, to be faithless and think that the glories of the holy Dham are imaginary. And to be very careful not to fall into there. So these are the offenses. This is the mentality we have to guard against if we have any desire of performing Tri Parikrama Padayo Svadhanam, of performing circumambulation three times around the holy Dham of the Lord. Now, here is the opposing point, the opposing philosophy that I mentioned earlier that I saw in this verse that it's a little, The last lines of this purport here, in other words, a devotee should always be attentive to executing their personal devotional service properly. This is more important than trying to live in the Lord's abode. Ouch. As I was reading that, I was reminded so many times, Prabhupada, when he was present with us, encouraged his work now, samadhi later. Somebody was just quoting that some connection the other day on Facebook. I forget what it was. Can't remember now. But work now, samadhi later. In other words, that we have service to perform, and this is what's here. First, Brahma had to complete his personal devotional service of universal creation. Then he could come to Vrindavan and get the mercy of the inhabitants there. Now, fortunately for us, Srila Prabhupada desired, instructed, and arranged for annual opportunities to go and attend the Dham, reside in the Dham. Mayapur during Gaur Purnim, Vrindavan during Kartik time, like that. These are opportunities for us. The problem with these opportunities is they increase our taste for residing in the Dham. And that's going to be dictated by, our responsibilities and obligations. The catch, I think, from looking here, I can say this. The catch is, what is our personal service? If my personal service is to daily take out the Krishna lunch to Santa Fe College, then maybe going and living for 3 or 4 months in the Dham might not work out. If my personal service is to run a very successful jewelry business, then maybe closing the doors and going to reside in Vrindavan may not work out. If my service is to be a teacher educating the children in our school, leaving and going to Vrindavan may not work out. However, if circumstances are that one can arrange their life in such a way to reside in the Dham, to go and take up residence in Govardhan, I mean, we've all gone around Govardhan Hill and at that one spot just after Govindakund, before it makes that curve at the end of the Cowherd Boy shortcut up on the other side, you can take all the stones and build a little residence for yourself. Up this one, okay. I want to come back to Govardhan and live here. Now, who's done that? So many of us have done that, right? Yeah. So we obviously want to go back there, but what are we going to do there? Now, if your circumstance allows you, okay, I'm retired, my children are all grown, I don't have any specific business, I don't have any pressing service here, I'm doing whatever I can go there and reside, then the catch is going to be what's going to be your personal service there. So if we're going to think of the Dham, if we're going to visit the Dham, if we're going to reside in the Dham, then to do those, we must serve the Dham. We must come up with some service for ourselves. You can't just go and live there. We're not that fortunate. We would have been born there if that were the case. We were born here in whatever circumstances put us here in this Western country. But if our life is blessed in such a way that we can go and reside in the Dham, then what we have to do is take up some service there, some specific service. And there's many, many different types of services one can do. We shouldn't think of it as a nice retirement place. You just go there and sit somewhere and chant lots of rounds and read lots of books. That's also service, but most of us do not have the inclination to do that type of activity as our full service. You know, even someone like Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, who was greatly qualified to do that, still set up a school for educating others in the process of learning how to translate books and, you know, do the different services in connection with the Shastras like that. So if we're going to go, we have to think, what type of service will I perform there? It reminded me when there was one point in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him and said, I have a service for you to perform. Now, what will you do about that? And this was all in regards to establishing Navadvip Dham as we now know it. But, you know, this is the mood that we have to have a service to perform for the Lord. So we may want to live at the Dham. We may want to visit regularly the Dham. We may have the desire to be at the Dham. But it can only be facilitated, actually, if we find some service in the Dham. Even if one gets the opportunity to go for a month, you know, a few days, a few weeks, whatever it is, we have to take up some service there. And that will make that connection and endear us to the Dhamma. Because let us not forget, the Dhamma is a personality. It's the personality of Godhead's residence. Therefore, it has a personified form. And we satisfy anyone, particularly the Lord and his different paraphernalia, expansions, resonances, by our service. This service that Brahma's performed, actually we'll see in the next verse here that the Lord actually has been pleased with Lord Brahma. I mean, lest we go away from this class thinking, oh, Krishna's really unreciprocal. And he really didn't, you know, I mean, Brahma kind of put himself out there and the Lord just left him hanging. No, we'll see in the next verse that's not actually the case, and we know philosophically that's not. But we find here that the Lord did reciprocate with him and gave him his mercy. So if we serve the Dham will reciprocate, and in due course of time, we will get that desire fulfilled. So I was thinking about this, and of course this whole line of thought got me thinking about the Dham and how much I would really, if I had my druthers, prefer to be living at Govardhan, but that's not the circumstance. So how do we adjust that mentality? How do we think about that as we are separated from the Dham? Therefore, let us serve the Dham that we are not separated from, New Ramanreti Dham. We're residing here. This is a holy place. The Lord is residing here. The Lord's pastimes go on here. The Lord leaves the altar and goes out for the boat ceremony. He goes out on the property for the swing ceremony. He goes out to the back and gets offerings from each of the residents here during his Gaur Purnima. We take him out on a little walk like that. You know, there are different abhishekhs that are performed. So many different services. So the Lord's pastimes take place here. The Lord's devotees reside here, and where the devotees are, what do you have? You have kirtan, you have katha, you have sangha. So these are all activities that one looks for in the Dham, and the service to the Dham can be performed here. I mean, if you have any question, gee, is there any service to be done here? It's not really Vrindavan Dham. Keshava, could you provide a list of service? I think there's probably a couple of things that anybody could take up. Well, I only have a few minutes. Great. Radhajivan Prabhu, you know, Radhajivan's not always in town. He's got business obligations. He travels a lot and he spends part of his time in India overseeing things. But when he's here, not everybody knows this because he's very humble about how he does it. But he comes after class is finished, after breakfast is done, takes darshan of the deity, and then he sweeps the walkway. He sweeps the entire veranda. He sweeps the walkway all the way out to the parking lot. Every day when he's here, he comes and does that service. That's service to the Dham. So there's always something being... Actually, he also does that when he lives in Barshana, where he spends the other half of his time. Everybody's been to the Shriji temple in Barshana, those big stairs you got to go up? Guess who sweeps those every morning when he lives in Barshana? So service to the Dham. Whether one is in the Dham, Barshana, Govardhan, Vrindavan, or whether one is in one's own temple, New Raman Reti Dham. There's service that can be done. Arranging to help with the cleaning of the plates. You know, that's service to the Vaishnavas that reside in the Dham. You see, there's a group of devotees at every Sunday feast. They're so enthusiastic. They have this whole network set up for taking everybody's nasty, moochy plates that we've slobbered all over and cleaning them all up, washing them all up, drying them all up, putting them in the cabinet. Boom. You know, that's service to the sadhus that live in the Dham. You know? So there's all these different opportunities to serve. What to speak of, you know, by getting directly involved in different programs that go on. You know, I'm sure there's days Mahabodhi would love to have a little extra help as he's going out distributing prasadam, or that the cooks would love to have somebody come in and help them cut up a few sabjis. I've only got a few minutes. Okay, so jump in, you know. I mean, this is just a nice opportunity, and it's a nice vision for us to think. And then by that vision, as Brahma was lamenting in his, both in these couple of verses here and in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we'll get that sidelong glance from the Lord. All Brahma wanted was just a little nod, you know? Just a little look off to the side. Hey, I see you over there. All right, Paul. You know, that's all he wanted, you know, just a little encouragement. But Krishna, being expert in how to deal with his different devotees, just kept him like right on the edge, right on the edge, right on the edge. And tomorrow, I believe Jugalokeshwar Prabhu gives class tomorrow, we'll see that, okay, Brahma gets his due. Brahma gets his due. Krishna gives him his blessings. All right, not a problem. Everything's okay. You know, so these are different thoughts about how we can circumambulate the Dham, serve the Dham, remember the Dham, and hopefully see ourselves actually residing in the Dham. And I have pushed the limit of my time. I just felt that these points were important, even though I got this note right here. I saw this sticking out from under one of the books, and I thought, oh, what's this? Please finish the Bible. I said, oh, right. So thank you very much. I'm actually a little bit grateful to... I hope I'm forgiven for saying this, Lowe's, for changing my schedule so I can start taking part in the morning program again. Hare Krishna, thank you, all glories for offering.